Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the JV Queen and the Dean and Founder of DirectionsU.com. I'm calling in live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And we've got another great show for you today. We've got my co-host, Rhonda DelBaccio, the Story Lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com, here with us today. And we've got a great guest for you today, too. Rhonda, I don't know if you've got yourself unmuted. I'm not quite there yet. Can you hear me, and can you talk yet?
Oops, trying. Hang on 1 second. There we go. I got it. I had trouble getting the mic to open up. Hi there, Gina. It's great to be here again this week for another fabulous show.
Me, too. I'm so excited about it. So let's talk a little bit about who our guest is today.
Well, I'm still looking for her on the panel. But we have Stephanie Frank here today.
And if you're here, Stephanie, go ahead and hit 1 on your keypad so that it can raise your hand and we can get you unmuted.
And let's see. I will contact her through Skype, and we'll see what we can do there. But I'm really excited to have her with us. I just spoke to her, a day or two ago. So I know she will be here with us and looking forward to it very much. And Gina, I know she is a big part of some really fabulous changes happening at Directions U. So why don't you share for a moment what all is going on at Directions U with regard to Stephanie Frank. And, oh, actually, before you do that, let's hang on 1 moment because here we go.
I found her. Are you there, Stephanie?
Here I am.
There she is. All right.
I'm so glad you can be here today. So, Rhonda, I'll let you do the honors, and I'll jump in where I need to.
Okay. So, we have Stephanie Frank here with us, and we know Gina will tell us all about the great things happening regarding Stephanie and Directions University. But first I'll tell you a little bit about her and a little bit about why she's here, because obviously we have a reason for every guest who's here. Stephanie Frank is the number one best-selling author of The Accidental Millionaire, which, by the way, is a great title. She is an absolute genius at finding your most important treasure, time, by teaching you to work from your core strengths. And because, as I said, she's part of the new evolution of Directions U, which we'll find out about soon. She's an in-demand human behavior expert. And she is the fresh new voice of personal success, productivity, effectiveness, and peak performance best practice. She is an internationally recognized master NLP coach practitioner. She's a hypnotist, a speaker, an author, and just a fabulous person all around. She is an experienced problem solver and is really good at coming up with some innovative ways to help you save time and really work from your strengths. With so many more things, just all kinds of accolades that Stephanie Frank has. She comes from an interesting background of studying how the computer works, which, interestingly enough, very much relates to how brain works. And so we'll be talking about that somewhat today. So, Stephanie Frank, I welcome you to our show today.
Well, Rhonda, thank you. It's so great to be here. And, you know, it's really important, too, I think, that everybody has taken the time to listen. You mentioned that time was a really precious resource, and it really is. So I just want to acknowledge and thank everybody for listening today.
Well, Stephanie first came into my world, I guess, about a year and a half ago when one of my other mentors, Kevin Nations, recommended that I really look into working with Stephanie so that she could help me manage my time a little bit better. At the time, I was working 16 to 18 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week, and I was so darn busy I couldn't even find time to take Stephanie's program for almost 7 months. And like Rhonda said, Stephanie's really a problem solver, so she managed to solve that problem too. And after working with her in the next 30 days, I was able to save over 52 hours a month. In the next 30 days, I got as much done as I had gotten in about 9 months prior. So Stephanie has just been a godsend in my life. I don't know what I would have done without her the last year.
Aww,
and I
want
to use today to kind of help our listeners have some of those kind of changes for themselves, too.
And well, excellent, excellent. And we'll be having all kinds of conversation about that, I'm absolutely
sure.
Oh,
yeah.
So let's kind of get into the idea of why is the stuff that you teach so important to people?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, you know, the things that I teach, especially with time, let's just talk about time first, shall we? And,
sure. Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things that you just said is time is your most precious resource, and I really believe that. Time is so much more precious than any other resources that you have. And, you know, most people think of resources as money. And the truth is, you know, money comes and goes. I mean, that's just how life is. Money comes and goes. And you can get more and you can spend more and it, you know, increases and decreases. But time is static. Time is we all have exactly the same amount. So
and when
you
spend it, you don't get it back.
That's right. And that's why they call it spending time. You can only spend time. You can't really make time. Well, you can make time, but you can't get
more of it.
That's right. You've only got the same amount of time as everybody else. And that's so the question, you know, that the burning question in my mind as a young person is, you know, why is it that some people make $10,000 in a year and some people make $10,000 in a minute? And it has to do with their use of time, their best use of time. You don't see somebody like Donald Trump, for example, who runs a very, obviously, very successful billion-dollar company. You don't see him running around, going down to the mailroom, licking a stamp, putting the stamp on there, running up to reception, answering the phone call, right? Going to the IT department, fixing a computer, and you get the point.
What happened?
You just don't see that. But yet, if you're an entrepreneur, that's what most entrepreneurs are doing, is they're running around from the mailroom to the IT department to the reception desk to the administration desk to the accounting department to the pretty much almost everything but the sales floor. And let's face it, in any company, you have to have sales before you have anything. And so getting people working in their strengths and getting people working to achieve goals is why this is so important.
Well, and, you know, I really didn't value time until I came so close to death. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I found myself mm-hmm. counting the days, the weeks, the minutes, the hours, and by the end of it, I was really counting even the seconds that I had left. And I chose to spend my time so differently when I realized that I had a certain finite number of minutes left on this earth. It causes you to look at it differently. But mm-hmm. most people don't ever have that opportunity until they're in their 80s or 90s or close to 100, and it's really the end of their life. And by then, it's too late to do anything different. So how can you help people to value their time differently now when they can make choices about how to spend their time?
That's a great question also. I mean, you know, the value of time can be put this way. If you imagine that everybody has 86,400 seconds, you do, Rhonda does, I do, 86,400 seconds in a day. That's it. That's what you have. Now, if you imagine that when you wake up in the morning, that $86,400 is translated into dollar bills. So you have a big pile of dollar bills hanging out there and sitting there at the end of your bed. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that idea. Yep.
Exactly. So then every second, so the second you open your eyes, every second in that time forward, a dollar bill comes off the pile. And that dollar bill comes off the pile and goes into another pile. It's either going to be the productive use of time pile, that makes you money and gets a bigger pile, hopefully, or the unproductive,
right.
or the unproductive pile. Now, at the end of the day, the question I always ask people is, which pile is bigger?
Good That's question. A really good way to look at it.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
If you choose to sleep in until noon every day, you no longer have the 86,400 seconds of the day. You've only got about 43,200 or half of that.
Well, and that's the thing, is the money gets spent, the dollar bills, the seconds get spent while you're sleeping, too. So,
right.
So if you're sleeping, then that's a default. It automatically goes to the unproductive pile if the goal is, and I'm saying if the goal is making money. Understand.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not advocating that you don't go to sleep.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. We're not advocating that you become, try to stay up all day and whatever. No, of course not.
But I would think that if someone had a business that could make them an income passively so that they really truly were making money while they were sleeping, you could even shift your money that's going into the inactive pile and the unproductive pile to the productive pile just by having a business that can make you money passively.
Exactly. That's exactly how it should work. And a business and ultimately bringing that into multiple revenue sources and so on. That's exactly how it works.
Really interesting. So you've got some specific things that you do with folks to help them better understand this. Where does someone start? I mean, they don't just wake up one morning and now they're a business owner and they have passive income and yay, we're all making money all 24 hours of every day.
Wow, wouldn't that be great?
That'd be nice, yeah.
Well, there certainly are some very, very specific steps that need to happen. And the first step, especially as it relates to your time, is you've got to begin to, as now we've started to take a different look at time, which is good, now you've got to start taking a look at your calendar. If you're like most people, you wake up in the morning, you get all excited, you make a big fat to-do list, you write down a bunch of things, and then you start tackling the to-do list,
sure.
or you try to, and then things happen, and you get distracted, and you get interrupted, and you get whatever, and by the end of the day, you're looking at that list going, gosh, I didn't get anything done, and that's frustrating. And so what that does is that's a system we've all learned. That's a system that is a guaranteed formula for failure. So you're setting yourself up for failure every day, and that's not good. So I want to set you up for success every day, but again, it requires a little different way of doing things. So setting up for success means that you have a to-do list that has the main important things on it and time buckets that are available to do those important things. It's a mathematical impossibility to hope that you're going to get something done. It's not going to work. And that's what most people do, is try to fit in their tasks on the off times in their calendar.
So Stephanie, what you're saying is that hope is not a life planning strategy. Is that accurate?
Yeah, like to quote that famous book, right? Hope is not a strategy. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Hoping to get something done absolutely will not work. So the thing is that's what we've all been taught to do. So there is a certain kind of time, and there are four kinds of time actually, but I'm going to start with one in particular. And that is my favorite kind of time to put on somebody's calendar, and that is called focus time. And focus time basically means I'm going to set aside a bucket of time, whether that's 15 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours or whatever it is, I'm going to set aside that bucket of time so that I can do the things on my to-do list. But here's the thing, you guys. Let's say you set aside an hour of focus time. You look at your to-do list, and there are 10 things on your to-do list, and each one takes 15 minutes. Well, guess what? You have 60 minutes to get 150 minutes worth of work done. It's impossible. And so what this serves as is a forcing function to force you to really consider what are the highest priority items on your list, because I guarantee they won't be in the order in which you write them down. I guarantee that. Yeah, they won't be. So you've got to consider, okay, I have...
No, because that'll be whatever pops into your head.
That's right. And that's pretty much how it works. A lot of times the most important things end up on the bottom of your list. So when you prioritize, when you look at your list and you pick out, okay, here's the top three things or two things or whatever that I'm going to get done in my focus time that's going to serve to move my business forward. That's the really key component. Because you know what, you guys, at the end of your life, you're going to have a to-do list. There's no question. The question is, what's going to be on it?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like most people, taking out the garbage won't be on your list. But I want
right.
to make sure that
exactly.
you get to climb Mount Everest or, what, you know, go see a sunrise in Haleakala in Maui or, you know, go to the Great Pyrenees, whatever it is that you want to do. That's why I'm so passionate about helping people to reclaim their time so that they can have that time to do the things that they really want.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really true. And what now we've got this, okay, I want to make a move into this cool new way of operating within time and getting what's really important done. How are we going to make that shift from being this, well, I'm just going to try to chug through my to-do list to, okay, now what do I do to get myself on track?
Okay.
Focus on.
So there's a really important concept here that just came to my mind as you were talking about this, and that is this, that I'm a firm believer in the reason that the law of attraction, which you guys are both familiar with, the reason that the law of attraction works is not because you sit there and you think about it and you get really clear on what it is that you want. That's part of the law of attraction. What makes the law of attraction work is that you make a decision to make something appear in your life. You just decide. And you use the law of attraction. I'm going to circle back to what you said, but I want you to understand this. Making a decision is such a key component in our life, and most people don't make a decision. They hope, they want, they wish, they wonder why it's not happening, but they never make a decision to make it happen. And when you mm-hmm. do make that decision, things appear in ways that you would have never thought about before. And I'm thinking right now about a story that I wrote in my book, *In the Accidental Millionaire*. I was in San Francisco a few years back, and I was only there for 2 days because I was doing a speaking engagement. And I went. I decided that I was going to go see Alcatraz. Notice I said decided that I was going to go see Alcatraz. So because I'd never been there and it was exciting and you know whatever. But I only had Saturday afternoon available. That was it. Because I had to get on a plane and leave. So I did what everybody would do. When you make a decision to do something or go somewhere or get something, you do what normal people do is you take the route that is the most obvious. So I went to the ticket booth, and I went to buy a ticket. And the lady said, hey, you can no problem, you can definitely go. It's just that we need to send you a ticket between next Friday or next Saturday or something. The tickets were like a week out. And I said, oh, my gosh, no, that's not – no, I want to go today at 1 o'clock. And she said, no, you can't do that. We don't have any tickets. We're all sold out. Well, I backed up and I said, now, this is where most people would say, okay, it's not working. I guess we can't go to Alcatraz. Well, what are we going to do next? Not me. I said, I'm going to Alcatraz this afternoon. I don't know how yet. But I'm going. So I let that thought go for a minute, and I started walking down the little boardwalk there and doing some shopping. As I'm looking in some of the windows, this guy pops out of nowhere, and he goes, 2 tickets to Alcatraz. I went, huh, okay, I'll bite.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'll bite. What does that mean? So I go in, I talk to the guy, and it turns out that in order to get the 2 tickets to Alcatraz, you have to go see a timeshare presentation. And I said, well, if I go see the timeshare presentation, you know, what time does it end? He said, 12:30. I said, can I get on the 1 o'clock flight, the 1 o'clock boat? He said, yeah. I said, great, I'll go. So I went to see the timeshare presentation, got my 2 tickets to Alcatraz, and got on the 1 o'clock boat. Now, if you ask me, how do you get to Alcatraz? I would say, you buy a ticket. I would probably not say, well, the real way to get to Alcatraz is go see a timeshare presentation. You know, meet a random guy on the street, go see a timeshare presentation and you know, and get on the 1 o'clock boat. That's not the normal way. So the reason I tell you that story is because the decision part is key in implementing anything new. So until you make a decision to reclaim your time, it's not going to work. You can't hope. You can't wish. You can't get pulled away by everybody else and say, oh, woe is me. My time is not my own. No, it is yours. And when you make a decision, that's when everything starts happening, Rhonda. It's, say, I'm going to protect my time, period. Mm-hmm. And then you protect your time. But you've got to be convicted in that decision. Because as soon as you are, new things will appear and new ways of operating will appear. But until you make that decision, it won't.
And as I've found in the last 11 months or so, repeatedly different things are going to come back up that can easily take that time away from you again if you're not if you really don't have that conviction to maintain the value of your time.
Right. Yeah, that's really true. That's really true. And so we all go through cycles. You know, it's not like you go, okay, I've fixed all my time problems, now what's next? Right, because we are creatures of habit, so we go back sometimes to habit. But the nice thing about having a system to reclaim it is you can always re-implement the system.
Absolutely.
Or change the
system. Recommitment.
Recommitment. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Listen, let me let our listeners know, because some people may have questions for you, Stephanie. So if you'll give me just a couple of seconds, let me tell people how you can ask a question of our guest, Stephanie Frank.
If you'd like to ask our guest a question, simply enter it into the chat. We appreciate your participation on Relationship Marketing 101.
All right, so enter your questions in the chat. I think that recommitment is something really important. It's like redeciding when something comes up, not to fall back into the old pattern, but to recommit, reconvict yourself to that decision of protecting time. And I know that I go through that, and sometimes people get a little annoyed with me because I won't look at ridiculous God emails and all these weird things that people send by, because I just don't have time in my life for things that aren't going to propel me toward my dreams. And so they said, did you look at whatever? Like, no, I didn't even see it.
Sure.
So.
That's good. That's good. Because some people get really overwhelmed. I know I have the opposite. As more information comes in, I sometimes try to handle more information than I can, and then I have to recommit and go, no, you don't have time for all this. Bye-bye.
Oh, but I, of course, never, ever get overwhelmed. Ha-ha, I am so perfect. Ha-ha. Right. I'm not saying I never get at all overwhelmed or sidetracked, because I do, but it's just interesting. When you make these commitments, sometimes the people around you in your life are somewhat affected by those things, and sometimes in good ways and sometimes in ways that they don't like, because it's not necessarily a part of their agenda.
Sure, absolutely.
And I think it's important to remember that only you have control over things like your time and what you're doing to spend that time. And other people, you can take their feelings into account, but you can't change them. So if they're irritated at your lack of value in what they value, you have to make the choice as to which way you're going to go with it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, we teach people how to treat us, right? And so for most people, they let's say, a distraction or interruption or something comes up, and what do? They immediately respond. And so if somebody's getting results, it's like, honestly, I mean, human behavior is like dog or cat or animal behavior, right? If you get if a dog barks and you give it a bone, it's going to keep barking to get the bone, no matter how often you tell it to stop, because it's getting
mm-hmm,
results.
Right. That's right. It goes, I get the result I want.
That's right. So the human behavior is the same. If you get interrupted and you allow yourself to do that, so if the phone rings and you pick it up during your time that you shouldn't be, that's not their fault. That's yours. And you do have so much control over how people treat you. And the thing that most often happens, though, is we'll sit down and we'll say, okay, I've got an hour of focus time. And then you get into your focus time and somebody walks in. That's the biggest interruption, is when somebody physically walks in because, oh, my gosh, but this is so important to me at this particular moment. And if you've answered the interruption in the past, they will continue to do that. And you will be, what will happen is you'll become frustrated, overwhelmed, you'll become burned out, you'll get mad, you'll get all these things. Why can't these people see? I'm having this focus time, or I'm busy, or I'm whatever. Well, again, with personal responsibility comes great respect for self. And this is something that you taught them that it's okay to do. So there has to begin a process of unteaching in a kind and gentle way, because
right.
like it can really deteriorate. And this happens with, you know, with husband and wife teams and solo entrepreneurs, all the way up to major large corporations where people are constantly being interrupted. So managing that, it's different for everyone, but the basic intention is that we come at it and teach people a new way to treat us.
That's significant. You are the king to that, and recommitting to it all the time, just like you would to a relationship with your spouse or something like that. That recommitment.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's that, and then and in business too. When you think about it, the reason that people usually interrupt is because they're not empowered to be able to answer a question themselves. So the way to teach them how to treat you is one thing, but B, give them the tools that they need to be able to not bother you is the other. And I know this might take us on a whole different conversation of entrepreneurship and delegation, but it's important, because that is, if you really look at the underlying reason for the behavior, it's not because they're waking up in the morning going, wow, I wonder how many times I can interrupt my coworker today and just really make them mad.
Right. I know to work from home. I think they were in MLM, but they something similar. He had this where there were certain times when Dad was going to be on the phone or doing whatever he needed to do, and he had initiated this system where he closed the door, but he had a writing board, like a little whiteboard thingy up there where somebody could write a message, but he had this note that said, if someone is bleeding or dying, you can interrupt me. Short of that, you leave a note, contact me at, and he'd put whatever time he was focus time was over for him.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. That's a system that we teach, and it's it is also you'll notice how simple it is. I like simple, but it's also exceedingly effective, because it is very clear on the needs of the person, and it's very clear on under what conditions it could be interruption could occur, and
mm-hmm.
it's clear on when he will be available again. And that's a very closed loop, very good system, because otherwise people will continue to interrupt if they don't know when you're going to be available.
Right. So what I like how you keep everything very, very simple, helping people to guard their time. And I like some of the activities that you have people do. One of them I remember from a live event is have to do with all of the tasks that you do during a day. You know which one I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit about that with our listeners so that people can maybe after the show go and do this for yourself?
Sure. I mean, so another step in a place to start is once you've got your focus time sitting there on your calendar, you've got to take a look at, well, where are you spending your time right now? Because if you're not having the results that you want, whatever that is, if you're not having the money results, if you're not having the sales, if you don't have enough customers, if you don't have blah, 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 whatever it is, it's all a result of how you are spending your time. So when you decide to reclaim your time, and when you decide to reorganize and restructure what you're doing, this automatically will start to show up,
mm-hmm.
or the holes or the gaps, I should say, which will automatically start to show up. So here's what you can do for that. Number one is take out a piece of paper and write down for maybe 20 minutes or so, or give yourself a short period of time, and write down everything that you do in a week, everything. And I'm talking from swishing the toilets to answering emails to doing a newsletter to talking on the phone to blah, 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 whatever it is that you do. And as you're, so once you get that all done, and don't even filter or censor or anything like that. And then the next thing is really cool. You know, that the basically everybody does things in four categories of time, or four, four types of tasks, I should say.
Okay.
So what you do next is you take a look at these four tasks. So number one kind of task is an administrative task, answering the phones, emails, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is a I just got interrupted. Huh, how interesting. Number two is a production task. So production meaning the creation of or the delivery of your product or service. Number three is sales and marketing. So we all know what that is. And then number four is household or personal. So the next step is to take that list that you just created, and next to each one of the items, I want you to put either an A for administrative, a P for production, an S for sales and marketing, or a H for household and personal. This is going to help you to group your tasks. And what you're going to see immediately is the state of your business and where you are spending most of your time. If you are starting up business and you are struggling to get even your first clients, I can almost guarantee that you're spending most of your time on administration and household. I've seen it over and over and over again. If you are a business owner that has spiked to the next level, maybe the six to seven figure level, and you're not getting the results yet that you want, the majority of your focus is going to be probably in production and not on sales.
Uh-huh.
In smooth, strong running companies, the focus is almost all on sales and not at all on administration or productivity or production. Now, when you think about that, if you're a team of people, you're multiple people, it's easy to spread those tasks around. But what if you're just one person?
Right?
Well, it's the same thing. Now it becomes a priority of focus, because what's happening, again, is we're focusing on admin and household is low priority when it comes to having a goal of making sales. So you've got to reprioritize your tasks. That's why the focus time is so important, because that is time that where you only focus on making sales. That's it.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Now, as the business grows, you can start to add people and leverage that, and I can go into that a little bit later if you'd like me to, but that's
right,
the next.
Later.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that, to me, I found that to be a really very revealing and helpful activity to go through, and I think it's important for everyone to go, well, what things I'm doing, and are there things that I can't get or find some other way to get them done or whatever, because it's otherwise it's true that you get caught up in what I like to call administrivia, administrative trivia, you know, just the little stuff. And that's very interesting talking about the evolution of a company.
Well, it's true, and that is how companies evolve. So you start out, you've got your focus time, now you have your tasks, right, all your entire list, and then as you look at that list, let's say now, okay, you say, okay, I've got this administrative work that I need to get done, but I don't want to do it. I want somebody else to do it. Well, now you get to start working with other people and evolving your company. And it used to be that it was so difficult to find a person because you had two choices, part-time or full-time, and that was it. But now with the advent of, you know, contract labor and virtual assistants and all these things, you can hire somebody literally for an hour if you want and make some of those tasks go away. What's nice about that is this. And by the way, that is how I started my second company, which went from zero to 10 million in just a few years. And I started with nothing. I had zero. But I did not want to clean my own toilets. And I did not want to work on the household stuff, and I did not want to work on administration. So what I did was I hired somebody for 1 hour. So the thing I'm speaking of, by the way, is I just want you to know it's not something I just read in a book. It's what I actually did to build my company. So I started with this one person for $10, and I put focus time on my calendar, and when she would come in, I would be focused on earning $20. I kid you not.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I could get more time. So that one person went from one person to, in 1 hour, to 2 hours, to 3 hours. She also happened to be a legal assistant, so she was very well versed in administrative stuff. She ended up doing household first, and then she moved into administration. And
wow.
Pretty soon she was part-time, and then she was full-time, and so on. And the whole time, that just freed me up consistently to be focused on the one thing, and the one thing is sales.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really powerful.
Yep, that's how it works.
I appreciate one of the topics that I know you talk a lot about, Stephanie, is that very few people are in roles that have them in alignment with their passions. How does that affect things like placing a value on your time?
Well, that's a great point. So where this affects time, and you know, a lot of people are very as a matter of fact, that's all I work with, are people that are passionate about what they do, but they're not getting the results that they get, that they want in their business. And as it relates to their strengths, or to strengths, they're constantly wasting time. So I love that you're asking this right now, because I'm thinking of, you know, this administrative thing that I was just saying. There was a point in time, I wrote an article about it, and it was one of the best articles that I ever did. And it started out, and it said, I sat on the floor amongst a pile of papers and cried. That was the beginning of the article. And it went on to talk about how I was sitting there on the floor on a pile of, with these piles of papers, trying to figure out how to set up a filing system. Now, while I understand systems very well, I, for some reason, could not at the time put together my own filing system. And so I sat there and I'd pick up a piece of paper and I wouldn't know which folder to put it in, and I wouldn't know which order to put it in, and I wouldn't know, and then I'd set it back down. And then I'd go to the next paper, and then I don't know where to put that, and then I set it down. And this cycle continued, and I sat there for 5 hours trying to do this thing. And finally, I just broke down in tears, and I called whatever person every girl's going to call when she's in tears, you know, Mom, who happened to be also running a legal firm at the time. And I called her up, and I said, I'm at my wit's end. I must be an idiot, because I'm sitting here trying to do this thing, and it's just filing, right? And that was all the self-talk going through my head, is it's just filing. What's the problem? What's the matter with you? Why can't you figure out just plain old filing, you know? And she started laughing, and she said, I don't know why you're even trying to tackle something like that. It's so not in your strengths. And here I was beating myself up because, you know, I couldn't do what I thought was this simple thing. She says, it requires a whole different line of thinking, a whole different way of organizing, and that's not the way that you operate. And that intrigued me. I was very young at the time when that happened, and that intrigued me and really started me on a path, which I now do with people every day, to really assess, okay, what are your strengths? Where should you be doing your work? Where should you not be doing your work? Because you're wasting time by not working in your strengths.
That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it all goes back to time.
So when someone is trying to organize their time, what do they need to do to really take into consideration where their strengths are and what their passions are? What should they be looking at?
Well, that's great. So first of all, the thing is, there are two components to it, really. The two components, and I call it your passion blueprint, and the two components are your values, what's important to you, and your style, which is how you experience the world. So let me talk about values first. Values are probably something, I mean, everybody's heard of them, you know, what's important to me and so on. It's not a new concept. What I have found, however, is that when you really bring these values to the forefront versus making them unconscious, normally our values are unconscious decision makers or unconscious drivers. And once you bring these to the forefront, you can literally hold it up against what you're doing and how you're behaving and decisions you need to make and so on, and you can literally have that blueprint. So values can be a lot of different things, and there is no right or wrong for values, but everybody carries around, they operate by about 30 values at a time. What's really important, though, is we make our decisions and our emotional state come from the top three values. So the values can be things, let me just name off a few. Intimacy is a value. Wealth is a value. Relationships. Family. Independence. Recognition. Acknowledgement. Organization. Instruction. Honesty. And those are just a few, but there are hundreds and hundreds of values. So as you ask yourself, what's really important to me? Now, we have assessments that'll just tell you what's important to you, but absent of the assessment, you can ask yourself, what's important to me about my work? Or what's important to me about my life? And you can take that then and start to put it up against your work. So here's an example of that. I talked with a lady yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I said, okay, so what's important to you about your life? And she said, family, freedom, and honesty is really important. I said, okay, great, so family is your number one top value. Let's take a look and now apply that to your business. Does your business honor your value of family? And she said, no. I said, why not? She says, because what family means to me, and that's, again, it's important that it's what it means to you, not what somebody tells you, you think. But what family means to me is that I have time to spend, quality time to spend with my family and my kids. And I said, okay, so why is your business not supporting it? She said, because I'm working 15 hours a day. Bam, all the way back to time again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right?
Wow,
So your values, when you get your values, you'll start to recognize, I'm not spending time on the things that support my values. And it can be a little shaking, jarring at the beginning, but it can also be just so freeing to look up and say, okay, I'm not doing the things that give me independence. I'm not doing the things that give me instruction. I'm not doing the things that give me recognition. I'm not doing the things that give me acknowledgement. It all comes back to what you're doing with your time. So those are values, the first part of the passion, the passion blueprint.
And that can be a big reason why people are feeling a sense of malaise or dis-ease about their business or feeling conflicted about it. Wouldn't it be, Stephanie, because maybe they're not honoring a value, but they're not realizing it.
That's exactly it. And with your values as well, it's kind of interesting. We've done this with so many people that I have an unscientific but very, very confident answer to how you can feel that, because people feel this. You feel it in your body when you have a values violation. You literally feel it. And here's what I've found is that when you violate value number one, you feel it in your gut. You know it's wrong. You know it's not right. You know it's not the right way to go. You know it's not the right decision, or your body knows, at least. But sometimes our mind overshadows our body, and we try to push through. Anyway, when really what needs to happen is things just need to flow. We need to take a step back and allow things to flow. My whole life is like that. I feel my way through life, and I make a lot of mistakes along the way. But I know when there's a peace. Right, and I think everybody does this to a certain degree. It's just I do it really consciously. I'll throw pieces out, onto the table for clients or for partners or for projects or for whatever. Throw pieces out and immediately go, no, that doesn't feel right. Right, but what most people and I'll throw it away. But what most people do is they take whatever's thrown out and they try to run with it, regardless of whether it's right or not. And that's because they're not in tune with their values. And so one of my missions, of course, is to get everybody connected to their values so that conversations can flow smoothly, so that communication happens easily, and most importantly, so that projects move along a lot smoother so you don't waste time running against the things that are really important to you.
And that's such a huge thing for folks to understand. I mean, when they really get this, that everything feels different about their life. They end up getting happier, and they end up having a greater sense of fulfillment, and it gives you so much more than just, okay, I did a little bit better job of managing my time, so I got a little more work done today.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the process of aligning to be in your strengths. So here's the thing is, when you're aligned with your values, you things, well, first of all, like you just said, I mean, things flow really fast. But when you're not, you literally will get sick. So I said your first value, you know, goes in your stomach area. When you violate your second value, you're going to feel it in your heart. And when you violate your third value, you're going to feel it in your, you're literally going to feel it in your throat. And if people would know to be a little more in tune with their bodies and where they're feeling things in their bodies, then you could make great decisions based on what's going on in your body. But again, most people just sort of push through.
And it's so strange. I used to be someone that regularly ended up with strep throat. In fact, when I was growing up, before I was 20, I had strep throat 22 times. I mean,
oh my
just
gosh.
Always ended up with strep throat. And even as an adult, although I didn't end up with strep throat, I got sore throats over and over and over again. I don't think I had a year go by where I didn't have at least 6 sore throats at one point or another. In the last 11 months, since really hearing this from you and learning this from you, I have not had one sore throat.
Really? Oh, that's awesome.
Really.
So,
and it was not something that I intended to get as a benefit of working with you. It was a byproduct of it.
Yeah, I know. I wish I could share with people, you know, and I do, obviously, in this case, you know, how strong the body connection is, the mind-body connection is, and that's really what it is. But most people are going through life with body pain simply because they are resisting or they are going against their own value system or their own personal style, one of the two, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's great to hear. I didn't know that.
And really, this last year, if you think back, you and I knowing each other as well as that we have, I have not been sick really one time in the last 11 months.
No, you haven't.
That has not ever happened since I was in kindergarten.
That's
really amazing. That is really amazing.
And it wasn't until just now that I totally recognized that that was the byproduct of working with you. Holy cow, was that huge.
Awesome.
That's very interesting, because that first one, you said the first core violation would be about, you know, your gut, which is kind of your power source, and your heart is your connection and relationships, and your throat is about communication. That's just really interesting, and those are areas of energy within the body anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they're connected.
Yep, exactly. So the more you struggle along with it, the more you end up in the hospital. The more you struggle against it, you'll end up in the hospital because it's scientifically, mathematically impossible for a human being to go against their values all of their life. You just can't. You can, but you will suffer.
You'll be so sick that you're going to cut your life short. You're going to be sick the entire time.
Exactly. So that's the first part of your passion blueprint, is knowing what's important to you, so that during those times of struggle or frustration or overwhelm or even decision-making, you can sit down and say, okay, I'm really frustrated right now. I'm really overwhelmed. I'm really stuck. Okay, is what I'm doing, again, this goes back to your actions and time, is what I'm doing with my time aligned with value number one, value number two, and value number three? And you're going to get the answer right there, because that's always the problem. Same thing with decisions. Now, you can be proactive on decisions by knowing this information, too, before you even go into a major decision. So when you're faced with a decision, again, you say, okay, does this decision I'm about to make honor value number one, value number two, and value number three? you're either going to get all yeses or all noes, which in that case, the answer is going to be obvious. But in the case of a mixed answer, you know, some yes and some no, I can guarantee this. If everything's a yes, but your number one value is a no, you will make a mistake and you will need to back up because it won't work, period. And you're going down a hard path. And I have a lady that called me a while ago, getting ready to make a decision, a big, huge decision, a $950,000 decision, actually. And she was so excited and so anxious at the same time. So she said, you know, I have found my dream house. And she said, it's got everything that we wanted. It's got everything that the kids need. It's close to schools. It's, you know, it had just all these dream features and benefits. She said, but I'm feeling really anxious about it. And I said, well, is it the price? And she said, no. I said, okay, let's look at your values. What is your number one value? She said, being around family. Interesting. I've had several people that being around family is important. I said, okay, so what about being out around family does this house not serve? Because you're just out of alignment with your values. That's it. And within 2 minutes, this was literally a five-minute conversation, and she said, oh, my gosh, well, here's the problem. If I get this house, I have to move away from my family, and I don't want to do that. I live by my family right now, and I love it. That's a huge part of my life. She said, you know what? You just saved me from making a $950,000 mistake.
Wow.
That's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is really cool.
And here's the one thing else I love about that is you talk about time. It's the theme through this entire show, right? So you said in a five-minute conversation all this happened. The cool thing is I know of people, like, okay, listen to this, Stephanie. You're going to love this one. I know of a woman who for 2.5 years that I'm aware of has been debating over whether or not to get satellite radio.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, it shouldn't be that big a thing. So in other words, what you're saying is when this is you really align with your values, you can really make a decision quickly because you go lines or it doesn't, and if they don't know the values, they can either take the assessment or check in and ask themselves what their value is or whatever, and then the decision becomes clear, and it becomes clear rather quickly, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it becomes obvious.
Almost immediate.
Yeah, and now the obvious answer also is not always the easiest path. You got to understand,
right.
You know, because emotion can get in there and so on. But,
sure.
You know, I remember a while back when we bought a ranch, and we bought the ranch because, for a lot of reasons, but one of the things about the ranch is that it had a 5-bay dog kennel in it. Now, I am probably the world's biggest dog lover. Or if you are, then maybe you go again, go on with me. But we're dog lovers, right? And so I walked into this place, and I didn't know that the kennels existed. And first, everything so far about the house was really perfect. I walked into this kennel, and it was like birds started singing, and angels were chirping.
No!
Exactly. Now, the reality of the kennel was that it needed work, you know, but I didn't care. I'm thinking, oh, little doggy beds, and I'm going to put up pictures, and I'm going to, you know, all these different things. And what was I thinking in my mind? I'm going to start a doggy daycare service. How cool would that be? I can do it out of the house. I can, you know, they've got this nice place to run, and I've got the whole thing built in my head, and I'm excited about it. Well, I had to obviously make a decision, so I went and I said, okay, let's take a look at my values and does this decision go? Because it's real easy to get excited about a decision and move on it, right? And then
well, I have never done that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. Well, with this process, it stops you from making a mistake. So my top three values are independence, recognition, and acknowledgement. And so I sat down and I said, okay, I am a speaker, and I fly around the country. Does this decision I'm about to make to stay home and deal with dog kennel stuff honor my value of independence? Now, independence means not that I want to be alone. It means that I want to feel like I have a choice. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I will now be tying myself down to regular feedings, regular walkings, regular bathings, regular da-da-da-da-da. Thought, oh, okay, it doesn't serve my value of independence. Does it serve my value of recognition? going out, making things happen. No, I would be staying home with the kid. Okay, no. Does it serve my value of acknowledgement? Yeah, maybe, because the owners would come and they would acknowledge how happy they were. And so, yes, maybe that. Okay, good. So I've got two no's and a yes. So I sat there for the longest time because now I'm emotional about this. I'm excited. I want to do this. I love the little doggies, right? So the emotion gets
right.
in, and I'm trying to push it. Yep, but it's okay. The yes is okay because the number three value of acknowledgement is being served. But everything in me said, you cannot go through with this because your
mm-hmm.
number one value, your number two value is not being served. So I had to
mm-hmm.
get past the emotional, you know, push, because that's what happens is we try to ignore it and push. And once I got past that, I realized, okay, this would be a really bad decision for me.
Yeah, really good example. And I love how you use stories to demonstrate these points so that everybody can very easily understand.
Well, you are the story lady.
Well, yes. Hey, let me just pause for a moment because we've been just getting so wonderfully involved in this conversation. I just want to remind people that of who our guest is and what's going on here. And so this is Relationship Marketing 101, but our guest, Stephanie Frank, and this is a brilliant guy who we're just really enjoying very much. If you want to ask a question, there is a chat that's available on the Exact Show page, and you can put your questions in there. We'll be sure that they get asked. Okay, so onward.
That was really good. So as we're talking about values as being the first part of the Passion Blueprint, there really is a second part as well. So if values are what's important to you, the second part is called your personal style, and that is how you experience the world. Your personal style is basically a filter that has you putting on a certain color glasses to experience life. That's whatever it is, whatever your color is. And at the core, there are basically four kinds of people. And, you know, a lot of people have taken an assessment before, like a DISC or a Myers-Briggs or the color one or the animal one or, you know, whatever, and have taken it and, you know, take a look at it, sort of look at it like almost like you do a horoscope. It's like, oh, yeah, yep, that's me. Okay. And then, you know, pitch it and keep moving, right? Have you guys ever done anything like that?
I've seen companies have a big to-do, and for about a week, they're all going, oh, well, hey, you're a blue, so blah, 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 or whatever. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it's all been forgotten, and everybody's little workshop and whatever money they put into it, nobody takes it and actually does anything with it a lot of times. So, yes,
exactly.
I think that's definitely happened.
That's exactly it, because, again, it's been presented as a, you know, here's what you need to do in order to understand other people. Oh, you're a blue, you're a green, you're a red, you know, whatever. In my opinion,
yeah.
That's the wrong presentation. You got to understand yourself first before you understand anybody else. You need to know what's best for you and what actions are best for you before you can go out there and experience it with somebody else. So in this realm, what we're talking about really is knowing yourself through your style so that you can, again, make choices in your actions that are going to align with who you really are and how you experience the world. So additionally, in not only in companies but in entrepreneurship as well, Gang and Gang did a research study a few years back, and they said they found that 55% of all people are in the wrong job.
Wow.
55%. So we have creative people doing accounting work, and we have detailed people trying to do art projects, and we have – I mean, it's just – it's ridiculous. I'm going to get to the types of people in a minute, but it's ridiculous. That's like saying the majority of the population, even though they're right-handed, they're trying to write with their left hand just because somebody said they should or they made a choice that doesn't agree with them. So in my world, it's real simple. If you've got anything that's not working in your life, you're going against your style or your values, period. So with respect to that, going back to style, it's all about you. It's not about the other person. It's got to be about you first. So there are four kinds of people. And two of these kinds of people are very task-oriented, and two of them are very people-oriented. And what that means is they get energy from either getting tasks done or being around people. So I'm going to just share with you the four basic categories, and then I'll share a little bit more as we go along. The four basic categories, number one is what we call strategic. And that strategic orientation, this is a very get or done, bottom line, right straight to the point. I don't care if it's done right, just get into some action kind of person. So very strategic, very action-oriented. The second, and gets a lot of, this is a task-oriented person, so they get a lot of energy from getting things done. The next type of a task person is an analytical person. Now, this is a person who, above all else, wants it to be done correctly. This is a person who does research, who values quality, who does, who is very detailed, very specific, very needs proof and proof of information, proof of concept, and will very often miss deadlines because the thing isn't right. Whereas the task-oriented person strategic person will never miss a deadline, but they may not get it right. Now, you can probably see conflict right there.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. One thing is it has to be done by the deadline, no exceptions, and the other one wants it done right. And so if it's done by the deadline and not right or whatever, fireworks.
Oh, yes. Big conflict. Now, what's interesting, too, is that we aren't all just one or another of the styles. We have all of the styles in us, but we just have them at different intensities. It's almost like we all have four glasses of water with different levels of being filled. And what we very often do when we're working against our style is we take from the least filled glass and then we drink from it. And then when it's empty, we slam it up against our face and try to get that more drops out of it when we have instead three full glasses right next to us that we don't use. So we all have some of these. So imagine now if there's a person who has a strategic orientation and an analytical orientation in the same person.
Yeah.
Right? Not just conflict between people, but conflict within yourself.
Yep.
My ex-husband was like this, and I'll tell you, I will never forget the time that I wanted a new phone system. I will never forget this. He was this way. He was half behavioral and half analytical. And half strategic and half analytical. And I wanted a new phone system. Now, the strategic part of him jumped up and I said, I just want these couple of features. So he led with his strategic part. He jumps up and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go get you a phone system. Rawr, get it done. Right? There we go. Get her done. And he goes out and he goes off to wherever he goes off to and he comes back with this four-line phone system. Boom, he gets them out of the box, he wires up what he's going to wire, and pretty soon, bam, I got a new phone sitting on my desk. I'm so excited. It hardly took any time. And we'd obviously been talking about this for a little bit. He didn't just jump up. But then he went back, and it was almost like I could hear the conflict happening in his mind. And I walked out, and we were sharing an office at the time, and he was researching. Now he just flipped into analytical mode. So he's researching the phone system that he just bought. Why? Because the analytical part of him was not satisfied because the strategic part just jumped up and got the job done. So the analytical part came in now and said, well, I wonder if I got it done right. I better go do some research. Maybe I could get a better price. Maybe I could have gotten a better phone system. Maybe I could have, and it brings up all of these questions. Did I get the most recent model? And so he started doubting himself. Next thing I know, sure enough, he found a better deal, and my phone system that was so perfect got boxed back up, and he's off out the door, you know, in his behavioral mode to get the right phone system, which I would have been fine with the other one. But that's an example of how important it is not just to understand style because you get along with other people. You can't do that until you understand how much you need it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the first,
that's
so those
really,
are the, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's really cool because then you can understand ever have a conflict inside of yourself, which we all do in different ways at different times. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't have that internal sometimes. So at least you can go, oh, okay, so I get what's happening. My this part and my that part are having a disagreement over what needs to happen. And so, you know, then you can maybe train yourself to go, well, if we do the research before we jump up and make the purchase or, you know, whatever it happens to be, then maybe the sides can work in a little more harmony. Is that kind of the goal or the idea?
That's exactly it. So once you know yourself and you know that you're both ways, you can design new strategies to make sure that all parts of you are satisfied. And you hit it right on the head. You hit it right on the head. So that's the task-oriented style. And then I want to talk about the other side, which is the people-oriented style. This is the style that gets energy from being around people. And these two are very different as well. So the first style of person is the harmonious person. This is the person who plays well with others, who is kind of the smooth-over person, who really wants everybody to feel good. It's the win-win person. Everybody's got to feel good, and there can't be conflict, and you know, it doesn't feel good for that, and everybody's got to be happy kind of person. And we all know people like that, and they're valuable, valuable people to have on a team. And the other type of a person is called the expressive person. Now, this is sort of like, this is the outgoing, bold, look at me, expressive salesperson, speaker, author, you know, anybody.
Nobody here is like that at all.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So very, very different, whereas the harmonious person wants to be really, really supportive. The expressive person wants to be really expressive and wants everybody to acknowledge them. So they again, now, these are four extreme differences in people. So can you now start to notice where conflict's going to come in?
Oh, I see it definitely. I know you can be both harmonious and expressive. You can want everyone to get along and really have a hard time dealing with conflict and yet be someone who's not afraid to express yourself, and then in so doing, sometimes creating the conflict you want to avoid or whatever, that kind of stuff can go on.
Absolutely. And just behaviorally, the way that these people operate, now what happens is not only do you have conflict amongst you, inside yourself, because you'll have, you are a part, you know, like I said before, you have all four of these,
right.
It's just at what intensity. But
right.
Now, behaviorally and interpersonally, that's where conflict can start to happen, because at the end of the day, it's all about credibility. And when somebody doesn't find you credible, all that is they don't understand your style. That's it. So let's say a really analytical person meets up with an expressive person, for example. Gina and I are like this, and I so appreciate what Gina brings to the table from the point of analysis and the point of, you know, who she is and how she does her research and how she does her things, because I am 180-degree opposite of that. I am expressive. I can't do research for more than 3 minutes because I'll forget what we're researching.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens?
And I could spend like weeks doing it and just still be finding new stuff and totally enthralled.
Exactly, and that's what's so beautiful about working together with your opposites. But for most people, they can't get past that credibility thing to really respect and love and understand what the other person brings to the table and give up their control of, oh, you know, this is the way it's got to be done or that or whatever. They end up in loggerheads because they don't understand style. But when you do understand style, now I'm respecting Gina for all of the amazing qualities that she has because of her style that I can't do. She respects me for the qualities that I bring to the table that she's challenged in doing. Now, what's also beautiful, too, is when two people also have a common style in between, which Gina and I actually do have. And so it's almost like building a bridge. She's on one end, I'm on the other end, but we have that commonality in the middle so we can easily navigate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would mean that there could more easily be some ground between you to build upon, and so it might help keep down between people. It might help keep the style wars down between people, that things that come up because of that, the differences.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, because there's a greater level of understanding. Not a complete understanding, but a greater level of understanding.
Excellent. In now, I know that you are working together now inside of DU, and all kinds of new and wonderful things are happening. So you've been talking about these different assessments. Is this stuff available from inside of DU, and is that available yet? What's happening there?
It's not available yet, but this is going to be the information that's going to be there and added to the program, because it's imperative that you understand how to manage these time pieces and your style pieces and your value piece, especially in order to run a successful business. You know, we were talking about passive income before, and we got on this whole conversation of, okay, what are the steps? These are the steps, you guys. You've got to lay the foundation for setting yourself up for success. And so these are critical pieces to being really, really successful in your business.
Good. Well, I'm glad that stuff, it is really powerful. And my observation with people is that sometimes people just get so entrenched in the way I do it is the way it needs to get done, and instead of just taking that step back, that little roll back, you know, to honor the different style, and maybe even to honor, well, which aspect of me, if I have two strong sides, or if I have a little mixture of all of these things, then which part of me needs to lead in this situation? I would think that would be really valuable to help you sort that out, and then be able to spend a lot more of your energy and time, our big theme of the day, working and living from that passion, that excitement.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole goal. Because when you are doing these things and you are doing the right kinds of things with your time, you can't help but be successful. That's just the way it is. You can't help it. And then your passion carries you.
Yeah. You said something really significant early in the show that I put a note because I wanted to roll back to it at some point. And you were talking about the story of how you got the tickets to Alcatraz. And
mm-hmm.
you went up to the counter and you couldn't get them, and you just were determined and you didn't know how it was going to happen. Don't you find that a lot of times people get so caught up in the how that they'll hold off on a decision because they don't know they're going to get there? That's something I wanted to roll back to you for a minute.
Yeah, there are two things. Most people are really caught up in the how and not in the what. And the truth is, you've got to know what it is that you're trying to accomplish or what it is that you want before you do the how. And so, you know, I just had a conversation recently with somebody who, you know, I said something on the what, and they immediately went down and said, okay, how do we implement this? And, you know, I don't know how, and I'm like, whoa, stop. You're not expected, when you're doing something new, you're never expected to know the how. The how will appear as soon as, again, we go back to the decision. And I have a couple of things about that. You know, it's the first thing I want to say is this. If you're going to go to, let's say you're going to go to Disney World, right? You're taking a trip to Disney World. You've just now decided you're going to Disney World. That's step one. What's
mm-hmm.
next is, well, how are we going to get there? Well, there are 100 ways to get to Disney World. You can take a train, a plane, an automobile. You can ride your bike. You can walk. You can, take a motorcycle. You can take a minivan. You can school bus. There are 100 different methods and ways to get there. That's the truth. But the question
mm-hmm.
is, if you call up Disney World and you say, how do I get to you? What's the first thing they're going to say? What do you think?
Well, they're going to want to know. They don't much care as long as they get their ticket sales, probably.
Yeah, exactly. What they're going to say,
where are you, right?
They're going to say, where are you?
They're going to say, where are you? When are you coming? And the tickets at that time are X amount. How long are you staying? Well, 3-day pass will cost you blah, blah, blah. They'll
exactly.
get involved in ticket sales.
Exactly.
Not
so
in
the most,
how they're going to get there.
The most right. So the most important thing, though, here is where are you now?
Mm-hmm.
So once you know, okay, I'm in Oklahoma. Well, okay, guess what? I won't be walking. I won't be riding my bike. Now that leaves a variety of other possibilities and other options available: motorcycle, car, plane, bus, helicopter. You know, whatever. Now I didn't say that all of these are reasonable or feasible, but they are all possible. It's just that we tend to go and we say, oh, I only know this one possibility, and that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
We put our blinders on, And when there's always so much possibility in front of us, but we put on our blinders and all we see is the blank spot. We go, I don't have transportation. I don't know how to get there. I don't know what I'm going to do. Now, obviously, this is a very simple answer where, you know, you come to the obvious conclusion that you're going to take a plane probably. But I use that to illustrate that's what's happening in everything that you do. In your business, in your life, there's so much opportunity and possibility out there. But when we get down in the dirt of not knowing how, what happens is all those possibilities, you literally put on those blinders and you stare at a blank spot. And so what has to happen there is you've got to be really, really clear about what you want. And then there's only one thing to do. Once you get clear on what you want, the only thing to do is ask this. I have this, by the way, as part of a universal problem-solving formula that I think is going to be part of our teachings. You ask the question, do I know what to do next? Here's what I want. Do I know what to do next? The answer is either yes or no. It's pretty black and white. So I'm going to Alcatraz. Do I know what to do next? Yes. I'm going to the ticket booth. Okay, great. I go down to the ticket booth. Did I get my answer? Is the next question? Nope. So do I know what to do next? It's a loop. Nope, I don't know what to do next now. So I go, okay, now, when you don't know what to do next, there's only one thing to do, and that is ask the question, what is my next step? The question, how do I do something, is irrelevant and to any of this process. If you ask me, Stephanie, how do I write a book? You know, you're a best-selling author. How do I write a book? Well, what I could tell you is this. Oh, Rhonda, I'm so glad you asked. So here's what you do. You go in, you write your outline, and then you write all of your headers, and then you do your front matter and your back matter, and then you do your book cover, and then you get your barcode. Then you got to get your graphics, and then you have to have everything laid out. Oh, and then you got to do a table of contents, maybe an index in the back. I mean, you're sitting there thinking, what? You write, that's so many steps. That's how you write, but that's how you write a book. The real question should be, what's the first step I need to do in writing a book? And I'll say to you, oh, well, that's a very different question. What you need to do is you need to go get Dan Pointer's book called Writing Nonfiction, and you need to follow his process to the T. Now, does that seem doable?
Sure, because it's one step. What's the first step? Oh, go get this book, read it, and apply it. And after that, whatever other questions come up, but you've got that first step. You know, it's like, Stephanie, it reminds me, I have trained my own guide dogs. And there are so many times people will say, well, how did you train your own dog? And I'm like, in 10 words or less, you'd like this answer?
<You know>? Exactly.
How long do you have and how much do you really want to know? Because I can give you copious details, but I don't think that's what you really want. So I'll usually, you know, and then that kind of brings it back to, oh, well, maybe that wasn't quite the right question.
It's not the right question. And that's why most people are so floundering in everything that they're doing, is because instead of saying, what's the next piece? What's the next step? What do I need to know? What is it? And then just letting it go and then looking for that next piece. Oh, this one doesn't fit. Okay, this one does. And what most people are doing is trying to wait for everything to be perfect before they make a move in their business. But the right answer is not that. The right answer is, what's my next step? And you won't know. That's the thing. You won't know, especially if it's something that you are looking to do that's brand new. How could you possibly know?
Oh, no. If you knew, you'd have done it.
Exactly. So that's where you need to find somebody or some information or do some research or have research done on, and find somebody who has done what you've done and ask them, what's my next step or what's my first step if you haven't started yet? Those are the only two questions to ask.
Excellent.
That makes so much sense, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you want to know, Rhonda?
Well, I would just like to pause for a moment and let people know that we, of course, have been listening to and chatting with Stephanie Frank. And what I want to do is let you know how you can let some Blog Talk Radio know how much you love today's show. So let me just do that, and then we'll be right back with Stephanie.
Are you enjoying today's show? Great. Tell us what you like best by leaving us a 5-star rating and a comment so that both we and Blog Talk Radio know how much you love the show. Thanks. We appreciate you.
And I want to tell folks about a product that Stephanie has that I think it is one that can really help kind of sum up everything that we've been talking about today. The product that Stephanie calls Staying Up and Down Times, and it's part of what she calls the Happy People Everywhere Project. You can find it at askggg.com/happypeople. I know I've sent a few of my own coaching students over, and they have just totally changed everything, the direction they were going. They found their passion. They are better managing their time. They really had gotten a much clearer picture on what they need to do because of this particular course. So askggg.com/happypeople.
Yeah, that's a great one, Gina, because what you're going to get with that, too, is you're going to get a whole process of not just looking at your time and your values, but it actually goes even a little bit deeper into some of the emotional things and some of the emotional challenges that are holding you back as well. So it's got a couple of audios in there that allow you to get into a more self-confident place, to get you into a happier, higher self-esteem place. And that's the next level of really what we're talking about on top of the style, values, and time, which is so clearly important.
Well, and the other thing that they get as part of that is a trial of your inner circle, where they really get into looking at their style and their values and their time.
That's right. Inner Circle is a coaching and training program that is specifically to make sure that people are staying on track. It's one of the most comprehensive and value priced programs that I am aware of out there that can help businesses grow. It's only $27 a month, and you get a lesson every 2 weeks. You also get access to a whole library of resources and archives, and we do a training every week for a short period of time. It's like 20 minutes or so training, and then a Q&A where you can come and you can ask your live questions and get aligned with professional PhD level coaches to help you grow your business. So it's again that's four. So that would be what, four calls a month, just for coaching. It's at $27 a month. It's a no brainer.
Yeah, and you get a trial when you first sign up with that course that I just shared with everyone. askggg.com/happypeople.
Yep.
Okay. So, Rhonda, what else do you want to know from Stephanie today?
Okay. So, well, the thing that I'd really like to know from you is, as we start to look at style for people that haven't taken all these assessments and cool things yet, so if they're not as familiar with it, is there a particular technique that you do or teach that people can, you know, kind of get tied into that passion so that they can get themselves out of a rut? You know, I know about asking these different questions about what do they know, what to do next, and so forth. But is there some way that people can really just tap into that passion and get into that happy people place that you're talking about?
Sure. I mean, passion can be found in a whole variety of ways or in a whole variety of things. A lot of people think that, you know, that they're looking for one particular passion or just one thing in their life that they can just totally be passionate about. But the truth is that passion comes in a lot of different ways. So let's say that you are a creative person, and that really is your purpose in life, is to create we'll just call it that. So that's a higher level. That's kind of the umbrella that goes over everything. So if your purpose is to create, and you can, by the way, your purpose comes through naturally with all of the things that you've done in your life. So if you take a look and you say, what are all the things I loved to do as a kid, loved to do as a teenager, and have loved to do in my work, and you write those things down, you will begin to naturally see a pattern to it. If you ask for each of the things, you know, what's so important about that? And it'll say, it let me be have fun. It let me do this. It let me do that. That's your purpose coming through naturally. So you get that, and that becomes the umbrella for everything. Well, creation can come in a variety of ways. Let's say that you're a painter and you're that kind of a creator. So you're painting, and you go along one day, and all of a sudden you go, you know what? I'm going to go into landscaping, and I don't want to paint anymore. I like plants now. And all of a sudden that catches your interest. Well, the truth is you can be passionate about painting and excited about it, and you can be passionate about plants and do landscaping because they're both under your umbrella of being creative. But for most people, they're going to say, huh? That's like a total change. And a lot of people feel guilty about changing a career or changing something like that. But the truth is that when it's under that umbrella, it's totally right. So you've got to take your interests first.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that how people maybe discover that you like something or good at it and enjoy it that you maybe never thought of? Like maybe that painter never, ever dreamed of landscaping, but they always liked plants and stuff, and then pretty soon, you know, they took a class or they had an idea or whatever, and they found it was in them, probably just because it's part of that umbrella of creativity. Is that right, or am I missing something?
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I've had two 180-degree opposite careers in my life, and one of them, as I grew up in my first businesses, they were all in high tech. I mean, really, really high tech computer stuff. And
right.
I made a switch to human behavior and time and all those things in about 12 years ago or 11 years ago as a career. And now most people look at me and they go, oh my gosh, that's like a major change. To me, it's not at all, because to me, the computer system and the human brain are exactly the same. Sometimes they need rewiring. Sometimes they need reprogramming. Sometimes they need to reboot. Right? They're exactly the same. So I don't see that as anything. And it also allows me to really live my purpose, which is to be a translator. And when I was in computers, I could take the really high-end language and turn it, you know, talk hex and binary on one side of my mouth and English on the other side. And it's the same way with this. I've translated for you today the secret blueprint that's behind the scenes that you didn't even know you had, that now you can understand it and you can start to put it into use right away because we made it simple.
Very definitely, yeah. And that really is, there is definitely that parallel. And it's funny how people do get rigid sometimes in thinking, before I moved out to Missouri now, I was teaching at a state college in Denver, and one of my friends says, oh my gosh, I know how much you love teaching, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. I said, well, why ever not? I just may not be doing it at a state college anymore, or any college for that matter, but that doesn't mean that I won't be teaching and guiding people. And of course, that's exactly part of what I do now. So it's just a different milieu, but it's the same work.
There you go. So don't let anybody tell you, if you're thinking about changing careers or you're thinking about about making that major change, you don't let them tell you, oh, that's too different from what you had or anything like that, because it will skew your thinking. You've got to just know who you are, get your style, get your values, look at how your time is being used, and you will be able to make the right decision for you.
Excellent. For people who might want to take the assessment that you talked about, is there a place that they can make that happen?
Sure. You can find the assessments at the Success IQ University, and that is located at successiqu.com. And there's a fun little thing that you can do, too, is taking the Success IQ quiz. We call it raising your Success IQ, because you're going to be more successful when you know this information. And if you want to take a fun little quiz that's free of charge, you can do that at successiqquiz.com.
Fantastic. Well, we've only got about 50 seconds left, so I want to thank Stephanie for being here and let everyone know that they should watch directionsview.com in the coming weeks, because we got some great things happening that we really are going to be doing in a big way, and we will invite everyone to help and be a part of it. I want to thank Stephanie for being here today, And let everyone know you can get to Stephanie at successiqu.com, and you can take the Success IQ quiz, which is just fantastic, at successiqquiz.com. And thanks, Joanda, so much for lining the show up and getting Stephanie to be here as a guest. I've been wanting to have Stephanie on the show for 11 months now. So thanks again, Stephanie, for being here. And we'll be back next week at noon Tuesday, March 16th, with another guest, Emma Tebens, that I met on the jvcruise.com earlier this year for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Thanks, everybody.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University.